This is Wade Rathke, and you're listening to Wade's World, a Voice of the People program. Welcome to the east side of town so that we can talk about how the other half lives and what life is like here living in Wade's World, whether that's the east side of Little Rock, Greenville, or New Orleans, or on Acorn Radio in Nairobi, Bengaluru, Bristol, or Bombay, points north and south, east and west, where we are either rebroadcast or live streamed at kabf.org and www.acornradio.org. A podcast will be available to show on these websites and at affiliatedmediamovement.org. You know the story on Wade's World. We talk to the most interesting people in the world, and today we're in Grenoble, France, and we're talking to Marielle Benchavon, who is the coordinator of REACT, but also has a lot of other interesting experiences over the last year or two. Marielle, welcome to Wade's World.
Thank you.
Okay, so Lyon is where you live, which is the second largest city in France. And a year and a half ago, you began doing some very interesting work. Some union organizing. How did that come about? What were you up to?
So, as you said, I'm the coordinator of REACT, which is a French organization supporting union in their organizing work. So when there are strong union, then we support the coordination of this union through the world, like, for example, against a corporation, coordinating the union in the transnational scale.
A lot of campaigns all over the world is what you've been involved in, I know.
Yeah, actually, we are leading our famous campaign is against the Bolloré's group, who holds industrial plantation of palm oil and rubber trees all over the world. Then we coordinate the local community organizing against the abuses of this firm. But also, we are supporting the McDonald's campaign here in Europe and particularly in France by organizing McDonald's worker. And so when there are already union, we support the coordination of these union. But most of the time, as you all know...
We wish there were always unions, don't we, Marielle?
Yes,
unfortunately,
definitely.
There are more of them unorganized than there are organized. So
when we started to do this coordination work, then we realized that the coordination never will be strong enough if these organizations are not strong organized. So that way, we're doing a lot of organizing work, and mainly on precarious worker. So as I said, we work in a transnational scale. So we organize these workers in France, but also in other countries, as we started the organizing informal workers in Cameroon. And here in France, we organizing these precarious worker in the sector where union are not active. So many unions would like to organize these new precarious worker. I think new, it's not really new, but it's new form of precarious worker.
Maybe their interest is new, but yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay.
It's like services sectors as
exactly.
The union in US, they're organizing better than here in France, where they are still in their traditional way of organizing, and they don't really succeed in organizing these workers. So that's why we make new experimentation of organizing these precarious worker, and especially we started, as you said, 1 year ago, 1 year and a half, we started organizing janitors, and especially in the cleaning of hospitality sector. With a small union here in France, which named CNT, and we organized them in the city of Lyon, which is the second biggest city in France.
And part of what I think you were hoping to either learn or prove was that members would really sign up and join a union if people reached out for them. Is that what your experience was? Because it was a tough learning curve, but you came around that curve at high speed.
Well, yeah, actually, when we started by doing kind of mapping of the different hostels we have in the city, and we found almost like 250 hotels. And I get to all these hotels to meet the workers. And then after one-to-one meeting, many meetings between workers, elected organizing committee in different company, leading a strike and driving negotiation, we built this union for 1 year and a half, getting almost like 120 members. And I was, unfortunately, I was the only one organizer on this campaign, but if we were more than one, then yeah, we could do a really huge job.
And but the strike was about what issue?
Actually, the main problem in this sector is the women who worked, I say the women because they are like 90% of the workers are women.
Oh, really?
These women.
Same in the US.
Yeah.
And that's a worldwide phenomenon. Yeah.
Sure. And so in their contract, it's written that they work by hours and they're paid by hours. But in reality, when they arrive in the morning, they arrive at 9, and in the contract, they say they should leave at 12. But in reality, when they arrive, they have to clean like 17, 18, or 20 rooms. And this work takes time.
Absolutely.
And then, so when they start at 9, they get out at like 4 or 5 p.m., but they only pay the three first hours. So you can find some women who tell you that they work like 6 hours a day, 6 days a week, and they only are paid like 500 euros per month.
Wow.
So it's like they paid them by room, but in the contract and on the paper, it's written that they pay them by hours. So this, we needed to prove that in the reality, they pay them by rooms and not by hours. So this was the main
struggle. This is an issue in the United
struggle.
States as well. There are no hotel workers who don't have issues with the number of rooms cleaned. And, 16 turns out to be a lot of it. I know in Las Vegas, it's down to 13 or so, but it's amazing, even in New York and San Francisco, it's 15, 16. And once again, same problem you're saying is that they say you're paid by hours, but you don't do those rooms in those hours. They don't care how dirty those rooms are. You can get written up and fired if you don't do every room, and sometimes you're asked to do more. So people had enough of this, and the union had to prove the contract meant something. I think that's what you're going to say.
Yeah, we looked for evidence that's showing that they pay them by hours. So the number, but they pay them by rooms, sorry.
Yeah.
So the number of rooms they have to do in a day and the time they give them to clean the room and all the work they're doing, which is not cleaning the room, has cleaning corridors or laundry or all the
public areas, yeah.
Sure. Public areas, meeting with their chief, and yeah, all this work was not paid.
Now, is that legal in France? Because, I mean, even besides the contract, I mean, even in the U.S., you have to pay somebody for every hour worked.
Well, it's totally illegal.
Okay, I would have thought so.
Cause yeah, yeah.
You have much stronger labor laws in France than we have in the United States. So
yeah, fortunately. But the problem is, in this sector, why do these cleaning companies, they're doing this? Because there are only few workers bringing them to the trials to denounce this situation.
Gotcha.
And the few that are doing it, finally, it's better for them to keep doing this. They're winning so much money in doing this than just in paying some cases in the trial. So, and you have these situation in France, I guess it's maybe the same in the US, but in this hotel you have about like almost 50% of the hotel who have subcontractors in cleaning rooms. And the situation is definitely worse when you have a cleaning society working in the hotel.
In the US, not that it matters, they have started subcontracting out sort of the cleaning of public areas, meeting rooms, but most of the work in terms of the actual resident rooms are still done by a staff employed by the hotel. So that's not contracted out for the most part. But the rest of it, anything outside, anything in the public areas, that's long gone in a lot of companies.
Well, in the hospitality sector, you have the luxury company like Sofitel or Hyatt or this kind of group, of international group. They have their own cleaners. But when you go to
some of these
lower standing,
places,
then they work with company, cleaning company.
And those companies are here today and gone tomorrow in a lot of cases. So you must have been chasing companies in and out of business too for that year and a half.
Yeah, exactly. And so when we started, the first work was to go to the hotel every morning when the people, they work their day of work, talking to them, taking their phone numbers, and make the people working for the same company in different hotels, make them meet in a common place,
far
away from the work, to realize that the working conditions are the same in the different hotels of the same company, and to see the interest of being together to win, like increasing their working condition.
And so when people decided to strike, did they strike just one company or lots of companies? How did that work?
No, it worked by company.
Okay.
So the most important strike that happened was in 7 hotels in the city who all subcontract the cleaning to the same company.
Ah, okay.
So in the same time, the worker from these 7 hotels, they decided one day to stop working and ask the responsible of the cleaning company for negotiation about the list of claim they already sent it by letter.
Okay.
So, and when they started this strike, the first day, the responsible came from Paris to Lyon to meet them. He was the general manager of the company. And the negotiation took like 3 hours. And you had the general manager of the group and 7 workers representing all the hotel in front of him.
Okay.
And this was an interesting meeting,
negotiation meeting.
Because we had 3 languages during the meeting. We had a representative from Nigeria who was speaking in English. We had
French, of course.
French, of course. And we had also Portuguese.
Portuguese?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say Arabic, but no, Portuguese. Okay. Well, that was exciting.
Yeah, it was.
First strike in 3 languages. Hopefully it gets easier, but never does. And how long did the workers need to strike before they were able to get a deal?
Just one day. Just the first day.
They knew they were wrong.
They knew they were wrong. And also because also for the company, it was the first strike. And they didn't know how to react to that.
Okay.
Yeah, and they wanted just to stop, to keep the market on this hotel. Because, of course, when you have the situation of subcontractors,
right, they would
the hotel, they say, okay, if you don't stop this, I will go to see another company.
That's right. I've got to have those rooms cleaned or they can't rent them out. So, yeah,
that
you
is.
Have them by the short hairs, as we say. We're talking to Marielle Benchabone, who's the coordinator of REACT, which works both in supporting and in organizing unions. When you talked about precarious workers, just to make sure the listeners understand, how do we define precarious workers as opposed to just regular workers?
Well, actually, it's more isolated workers. Because when you say precarious workers, today, nowadays, we can say like maybe half of the workers or more than half are precarious workers. We are precarious workers.
We don't want to go there. That's another show. That's another show. We can't go there.
Everybody can be, like, most of the workers can be considered as precarious worker. But we work.
They're working without contracts. They're working outside of normal workplaces.
Yeah, exactly. We work particularly on isolated workers. Unions actually, they organize workers when the workplace is really identified, and when you can find all the workers in the same workplace.
And that's becoming more and more rare, isn't it? Yeah.
Exactly. And so now the worker, they don't organize, or the worker isolated. So that's why we're talking about cleaning sector. That's why we're talking about home care workers.
Exactly.
We are talking about childcare workers. We're talking about security guards. And all these...
And that doesn't even count all the Uber drivers. I think y'all have kept most of the Uber stuff outside of France. But as you know, that's everywhere around Europe,
yeah,
and the U.S. And Lyft, Uber, and, you know, all these folks who are just itinerant.
So this is how one of our new struggle. Of course, we are also supporting collectives in France of deliverers who are organizing.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. So these are people on bicycle deliveries or motorcycles, or how do they make the deliveries?
Most of them are by bicycle, and they work for Deliveroo, Uber Eats, Foodora, and Stuart, which is a French platform. And they work. They are independent worker, and so they have a contract with the platform. But in reality, they are dependent of this platform as employee.
Yeah.
And but they don't have the rights who's go with. They don't have holidays. They don't have health insurance. They don't have minimum wage. And so these.
How are they paid, these deliverers? Like an Uber Eats deliverer, is he or she paid an hourly rate, or how are they paid by the?
They pay regarding to how many meal they delivered. So
it's like the rooms.
It's like the room. They pay by tax, by task, and
by
not
task.
By hours.
That's crazy, isn't it?
And but because they are not their employer. Because the deliverers are not employed by the platform, they don't have to respect the labor law.
We have the same problem in the U.S. with independent contractors, and even in the U.K., zero contracts.
Yeah.
And it's a shame to hear that that's so prevalent here. But so I think you were telling me before we went on the air about a meeting you're convening here soon in Brussels of deliverers from, what'd you tell me, a dozen countries?
Next week, actually, in Brussels, we'll have 70 deliverers from all over Europe, from 12 countries. So France, Italy, Spain, UK, Belgium, Austria, Norway, Finland, Switzerland, meeting in Brussels to coordinate their struggle and to see how to organize and how to build a European organization against this platform.
And how did you identify the various collectives in those countries? Did you do that, or did unions in the country tell you, or how did you make that happen?
Well, we first by doing it by ourselves, by going to the different country, meeting these collectives. So first France, UK, Italy, Belgium, and then we contact the trade union, asking them about what is the organizing work in this country. Also, the deliverers themselves, they already used Facebook, WhatsApp group, talking together through different countries to see how it's happening in the other country.
Gotcha.
And this was really interesting because we discovered, for example, that in Austria, they're all employed by the platform directly. In Norway, half of them, they are employee of the platform. Half of them are independent workers. In France or UK, they are all independent workers.
Right,
so the
right.
situation in France, the platform
still... Well, that's good
still,
to find out right there.
Yeah, the platform still trying to find their model. But they didn't find it yet.
But they're also trying
that's
to see
the
what
good
they
night.
Can get away with, aren't they?
Yeah, and so that's why it's the time to organize.
And what is the agenda for this conference? It sounds important for the deliverers. Are they going to try? What are they trying to do? Just tighten up the links and share information, or is this sort of the beginning of an organization?
So actually, it's the first meeting for them. So the first step, as we all know, the first step is to know each other, to build self-confidence, to build confidence between
right.
the workers. So the first day will be most of it sharing information about platform, different situation, legislative situation, struggle, collective action, victories. And the second day will be workshop on common demands, common collective action planning, and which kind of organization they want to build in a European scale. And then the last afternoon, they will have a general assembly to decide and to take decision for next and to build the next step of this European organization.
So given the question we talked about on your negotiations in your hotel in three languages, how many languages is this meeting going to have to be held in?
Well, actually, we plan to have three languages, so French, English, and Spanish.
Ah, okay.
Because the deliverers coming from Italy, for example, they all speak French or English. Same for Germans. And
Finland probably, they speak English.
We ask all the deliverers which languages they can use, and then we found that we need three languages.
So how, just technically, that can't be easy. Are you going to have simultaneous translation?
Yeah, that's what we planned. So that's why we also asked the support of different national trade unions to pay for this work, to pay for the venue of the deliverers, for the accommodation, but also for the translation, which is huge cost.
Yeah, no, we've been through that before, organizing. So the unions have been supportive?
Some of the unions, it depends on the country. Some of the unions, they support the organization. In some other country, they are only collective outside of the union. The example of Spain, they have their organization, which means directors, right, and directors. And then they are linked, they don't have links with union.
So they're
national
just independent.
Union. Yeah.
We're talking to Mariel Venturebone, who's the coordinator of REACT, which both organizes workers and supports existing union struggles. Okay, so McDonald's, the Bolloré Supfin campaign, we can't leave those out. So I know y'all have done some very colorful actions around McDonald's workers in and around Paris. I've seen some pictures that were in the news of Ronald McDonald, like, I guess I can't say Ronald McDonald, but I know y'all have been doing that for a couple of years in conjunction with unions. How's that working?
Actually, we started in 2016 in Paris because the union of Paris organizing McDonald's worker, there was a really small union gathering only few workers, and they asked us to help them to supporting this organizing work. And in the same time, we were talking to SEIU in UK, in US,
right,
was leading the Fight for 15 campaign, especially driving on McDonald's worker and fast food workers.
And
in
they
general.
Still are, right?
Yeah, definitely. So when we asked them, the SEIU asked us to support this organizing work in France because France is the first market for McDonald's in Europe and the second one in the world. So there were a huge...
In terms of the size of the market?
In terms of the size of the market,
exactly.
I didn't know
that, okay.
Yeah. So it's the second country in the world and the first one in Europe. So that's why it was really determined in the international campaign to have McDonald's worker organized in France. So we're starting this work in Paris by organizing workers, but in the same time organizing a coalition of allies with students' unions, who are, because most of the McDonald's workers are students.
And a lot of their customers are students too.
Definitely. So students' unions, but also farmers' unions, because many products coming from this industrial agriculture that the unions is fighting against, and also NGOs working against the fiscal...
The GMOs and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah,
I know that's
also
a big issue in Europe and some places in the U.S. So did you feel like you were making progress on McDonald's? I know some of the actions were very colorful, but that's a tough target, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Well, actually, during the first years, we do the organizing work, but it was really hard because they had a lot of repression against the worker. They tried to stop the organizers many times. And yeah, it was one of the hardest sectors that we organized until now. And after we decided to focus our strategy against franchises, because like some franchisor, they have the power to change the situation in their restaurants.
Absolutely.
Even if the company,
yeah,
the corporates,
right,
they don't.
Yeah.
So that way we decided to do this strategy in the scale of the city in Paris. So we have two franchises which represent about like 20 restaurants in Paris.
Okay. And there you're focusing the energy.
Yeah.
So before we leave, Socfin Bolloré, I know I was in Cameroon with many of the REACT organizers and Eloise and others. And this has been a campaign for a long time that involves not only countries really throughout Francophone and even Liberia, Africa, but Cambodia. And we keep coming close. We've had negotiations with them. What's the heart of the issue? They're not living up to the contracts, and it's land grabbing, I know, but you're trying to make them live up to these promises?
Yes, and we started the campaign in 2010, and 7 years after, so last year, we had the first promise from the company. So it was 7 years
of
struggle from the local communities, organizing collective nonviolent actions many times a year and simultaneous in the different countries to stop the activities in the same days. And we finally get some promises from the company on one of the most important victory was they said they stopped the expansion of the plantation until we had a great discussion and platform negotiation with the organization representing the local community. So our first struggle was to win the recognition of these
community organizations.
Community organizations.
Exactly. Now, Bolloré has been in the papers. He's got some problems. Bolloré is actually a long, historic, wealthy family in France and Belgium, but he's got some problems in Africa now, doesn't he?
Yes. Actually, the action these community organizations organized in the different country where Bolloré is put the lights on his activities on industrial agriculture, but also on transports and other
logistics
sectors,
and
energy,
building trains and ports and lining the pockets of a number of authoritarian rulers in Africa. That seems to be the question, is whether or not he was involved in corrupt practices vis-a-vis some of these country leaders, huh?
And he's really careful with his image in the media and in the society in general. So that's facilitated the campaign when the media started to focus on his personally, because it helped the company to react to their demands.
Well, you said the word REACT. So how do people reach out for you if they want to know more information about REACT, or if they want to send some donations to support the organizing? Tell people how to do that, Marielle.
So, yeah, sure. We always need support.
Yeah.
I mean, donation, but also volunteers if in France, but as I said, all over the world. And so you can go to see our website, which is Project, P-R-O-G-E-T. React, REACT .org. And also you can follow our Facebook page if you have some more current news. We have like almost everyday publication of what we are doing in a different country and in our different campaign. And we now start a new campaign in the city of Lyon on home care workers and childcare workers, and we'll need a lot of support for new organizers and for leading this new challenge.
That's REACT, REACT.org. You can look it up on Google and every other way. This has been Wage World for another week, the world where the other half lives, where we talk about things you've never heard. And as Lucinda Williams sang, things you've never seen will never forget. As the song goes, we say it loud, we say it on the air, we say it on the radio. Until next week when we'll have another guest, this is Wade Rathke from Wage World.
This program is produced by the Arkansas Broadcasting Foundation, KABF-FM in Little Rock, Arkansas, and is distributed through Affiliated Media Foundation Movement, AMFM, serving the needs and interests of low and moderate income Americans.